and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
Steve's back.
Yay!
I had 2 weeks off. Well, I haven't actually been off. That's what's the bad thing about this.
I don't believe a word of it.
I just didn't come to talk to you about tyres.
Yeah, I had better things to do, like probably relaxing and not working on your 90.
Well, not working on 90 is a common theme, you know that.
Yeah. You need to get cracking because Defender Restore, Jamie's been forging ahead.
I know he has. But a lot on.
That said, tomorrow you're making an important step, aren't you?
An important purchase. Tomorrow I'm picking up, finally, my AutoSparks loom. And it's been ready for about 6 weeks, but I just haven't been up there and picked it up yet.
Yeah, that would be good. I was thinking earlier, I drove a Series 3 in this morning and I was thinking, I might have to replace the loom on this soon. It's all very crispy and fragile and brittle.
Well, can I recommend you go and see the guys and girls at AutoSparks?
Well, they are the people to go to in the UK, aren't they?
They certainly are. So I'm going to have a look around tomorrow. Have a quick look.
It's a very...
the operation.
I think, yeah, wiring looms are one of those things where no one really wants to... They're not like a nice, shiny thing that you look at and go, wow, that looks so cool. But they do... They really do make a difference.
Definitely, definitely. No, I'm looking forward to the trip up there tomorrow.
Yeah,
well, far away.
Be interesting to see what it's all about and how they're made and things like that.
Yeah, I've seen some videos on like YouTube. Wiring is not for me, 100%. So when we get to that point, I'm hoping to employ yours and Neil's skills.
Neil's the man for wiring.
Yeah, he's the wiring guru.
100%. He sorted out so many bodges and stuff on my Series 3.
Mm.
But yeah, ultimately, I think I'll be probably... going and having a word with AutoSparks at some point myself. But anyway, shall we? We've actually had a bit of a build-up of listeners' questions in the time. You know, we had 2 weeks talking to the lovely guys over at Southam, Mitchell Diva and 4x4 Tyres. So there's a bit of a backlog to get through. Are you happy?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Crack on. Right, first of all, nice bit of feedback, which you might have seen from the current issue, which is on sale. I went and did 4x4 Scalar Nationals and I sort of made a little announcement at the end that going forward in the next couple of months, there will be a dedicated model section in the magazine. Mark Parsons dropped an email just to say, congratulations on a year of podcasts. Here's to many more. I love the idea of a model/RC section of the mag moving forward. Kind regards, Mark. Well, good news, Mark. That's actually happening.
That will be cool.
So
yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I believe you've had a question, have you not?
I have, yes. So... from a Christian Rawlings, nonetheless. So, hi guys, hope you're both well, enjoying the podcast. He's only just got going with the podcast, so he hasn't listened to them all yet. So he's slowly but surely catching up. Thought he would get in touch, ask us a question, hope we can answer it for him. And this is a question, actually, we've gone to the guys at Exmoor Trim to answer because it involves the rear seats in the Defender 90.
Okay.
So he has basically 2 young children. They're out of car seats. And he wants to know whether his kids could basically have the same experience that he had as a child in his parents' Series 3 long wheelbase.
Okay.
And that is to have his kids in the back of his 90.
Right.
And at the moment, he doesn't have any seats.
It's a hard top or something, is it?
It's a hard top. I think it's a hard top van or something like that.
Okay.
So... what are the laws on seats and whether he can have the kids in the side-facing seats or whether he has to spend a lot more money and have forward-facing seats?
Okay, right.
Anyway.
It's just quite a common question, by the way.
It is. It's one I didn't know the answer to, so I basically went to Exmoor Trim.
If anyone's going to know, it's them.
It is, yeah. So John Rayson, he was the sales manager at Exmoor Trim.
Jolly good chap.
He says, the basics of the inward-facing rear seats is that they are legal for an MOT in the UK up to 2007 model year.
Right.
So we don't know which year Christian has. So that's a point worth making. That will coincide, won't it, with TD5?
It certainly will, because TD5 came out up to 2007 with side-facing rear seats in the county station wagon. And then when TDCI Puma took over, they went from... 4 seats in the back side facing to 2 forward facing in a 90.
Because the seat boxes change, don't they? The basic seat.
It's a completely different tumble and roll seat setup.
So basically, the reason being the government banned inward facing seats and lap belts in new vehicles on sale post 2007, with all seating having to be forward facing. As such, the use of lap belts or inward facing seats in a Defender built post 2007 is not strictly legal. This also quashes any use of the centre seating in the front of a Defender built post-2007 as well.
Right.
It's interesting. That's probably why they did away with it and just put cover boxes in them all, didn't they?
They had, well, the base model had a tray, didn't
it? Oh, the tray with
the two cup holders, which I've actually got in my Series 3, and it's far more useful.
I've got that in my 90.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah,
you?
It's good.
It's a lot more useful than people make out. But yeah, I'm sure I've seen TDCI Defenders with centre seats in them, but they must have been retrofitted.
Yeah, because you can't use lap belts.
Yeah.
There is no minimum age requirement for inward facing seats apart from the child seat laws.
Right.
So I know child seats are built, designed to be forward facing with a proper belt through, aren't they?
Yes.
A 3-point seatbelt. However, we strongly recommend forward facing seating for anyone, especially children. They are, after all, designed for far better for a potential accident and protecting you from harm. There's your answer.
So, yeah.
You can do it. I mean, so in the event of even a small accident in a Defender, even at 30 miles an hour, the sort of forces imposed on somebody's side facing would be quite significant, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Your spine will bend more forwards than it would sideways.
Especially in a, like you say, in a Defender, which was designed before crumple zones and things like that, where a big steel chassis, if you hit something inanimate, you are just going to stop, basically. There's going to be no nice, cushiony, you know, squashing of bodywork if you were to hit something. So I think, safety has to come first here, doesn't it? And
But I fully get where Christian's coming from. My childhood, you know, I would quite happily be along in the back of a Land Rover.
Sitting
on like a retrofit cushion or something like that, or an old coat or something like that, as a cushion in a Land Rover, and you're just bombing around country lanes. But these days, it has...
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
I think so. It's people will go, well, you know, never came to any harm back then. But if you did come to harm, you'd come to a lot of harm, like rattling around in the back of anything, a Land Rover, a van or whatever.
Now, we're going off a side thing here. I mean, back in the day, you could just put a dog in the back of a 90 or in the front or any Land Rover. Now they have to be tethered, don't they?
Either tethered or behind a dog guard.
Or behind a dog guard.
Yeah. I hope that answers your question, Christian. Exmoor do all the bits if you do need forward facing lock and roll, I think they're called, or tumble down seats in the back.
Yeah, they've got them, and they have the built in seat belts, don't they?
Yeah, they're actually a pretty decent bit of kit. They just take up quite a lot of room in the load space, which is a bit annoying, especially in a 90. But it's one of them, isn't it? You've got to stick to the rules. If it is a post 2007, but then again, if it was a pre 2007 and you're carrying, you know, your grandkids or your kids, I would probably go forward facing anyway, just for the sake of safety.
Worth the risk, is it?
No. You know, times change, and you got to be conscious of things like that, I think.
Mm.
But shall I move on to another one?
Yeah, far away.
We've got quite a few to get through. I hope we're not going to bore people with these the plethora of questions we've got to get through. But so this actually came through to me on Instagram. What I would say is, if you have got a question, please email it to editorial@lrm.co.uk, simply because I miss so many Instagram messages because they go into requests or whatever, which I never check. So, yeah, do that. editorial@lrm.co.uk. This came from George, who is @DaisyTheFrontRunner, all one word, on Instagram. He says, "Hi, hope you're well. I'm George, a videographer and photographer from Hertfordshire. I've just been speaking with Ryan about what vehicle to get next, and he pointed me in your direction." I think that must be Ryan Nicholson, because I sort of know him from shows and that. You know, Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Nice 90.
Yeah, yeah.
For context, I've previously owned a 1994 Defender 90 called Daisy. Unfortunately, she ran her last run with me in Scotland and is now with a new owner getting some very expensive TLC. Anyway, I'm now looking at getting a Discovery, but I'm not sure whether to get a Disco 3 or a Disco 4. Anyone I've spoken to has said to get a Disco 3. Which would you get and why? Is there anything I should be looking out for when buying? Any help and advice is really appreciated. Thanks, George.
Okay.
What's your initial thoughts?
It depends on budget.
Yeah, it doesn't mention budget.
It depends on your ability to manage risk. At the end of the day, you've talked me in and out of Discovery 4 ownership every time. I go, oh, but they're really, really... And you go, yes, but have you got...
We're not going to linger on... In fact, we're not going to dwell on this question because we have covered it a lot. This sort of TDV6 engine conundrum.
Yes.
In fact, only yesterday I was sent a link to an absolutely stunning, it's like a light green coloured Disco 4, all the toys, top spec, just had loads of work done, just snapped its crank, 1,700 quid. And I was like,
What was that? Sorry.
Disco, the Disco 4.
For £1,700?
Yeah, with a snap crank, because it needs an engine.
So it's an £11,700 car.
Exactly. Anyway, so to cut to the chase, George, Disco 3, pros are, if you put the latest spec oil pump on it, which is slightly higher flowing, and it has the revised webbing where the cam belt tensioner bolts on, which was a weak point on the early cars, which caused a lot of engine failures. If you buy a Disco 3, fit that, make sure it's serviced, get the belts done. Long term, that will probably be a more reliable vehicle, engine-wise.
Yes.
The cons are they're older, so if they need lots of things like suspension bushes, suspension compressor, rust is starting to get to them now on the sills, things like that, go into it with your eyes wide open. Look for one that's either not rusty, obviously, or had all the suspension work done.
Thing is, though, the youngest Discovery 4 now is 9 years old.
Yeah, but they're not suffering quite as bad.
No, they're not. They're not, but they are aging.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if an engine did go in a Discovery 3, you probably could just get another one relatively cheap.
Well, a lot of people are using because the Jaguar S type uses the same block, but it's a lot of labour to strip everything because the sump and turbo arrangements are different on the Discovery. Okay. It's a lot of labour to swap everything over. The cons to the Disco 3 are, as I say, rust is getting to them. The interior is not utilitarian, but it's not nearly as modern as a Disco 4.
I did love my Discovery 3. It's still the best Land Rover I've ever had in some regards.
Yeah. Pros and cons, Disco 4. Overall, I think it is a better car than Disco 3. Twin turbo, 3 litre, a lot more powerful. If you get a late
one, a lot smoother on the gears.
A lot smoother. Mm. If you're going to get a Disco 4, I would say ignore anything up to 2012 and get an 8-speed one with the rotary dial in the middle.
Complete, yeah, chalk and cheese, they are. When you jump out of one, you think, oh, this is perfect. And you jump in a modern one.
Yeah.
Wow.
They are like, they're unreal to drive. They're one of my favourite Land Rovers to drive. They're so well planted. And that 8-speed box makes such a difference between that. Behind that engine.
And the later ones with daytime running lights make them look much more modern.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if budget isn't a problem, get one of the last ones, get like a 2014 onwards with they call it a Disco 4.5, where it's got the slightly more rounded door mirrors and the full facelift front end, and they just, oh.
15,000 quid will get you a really good one.
Yeah, it will these days. Yeah. But the main downside to the 3 litre is there isn't like a known fix for them failing. They just have a weak crankshaft. You could put an oil pump on. You could service it every 6,000 miles. It might still break.
Yeah.
But up till that point, it's a better car, in my opinion, than the Disco 3 in every way.
But just don't try and run one on a shoestring, because you won't get it.
Definitely don't buy one that's been run on a shoestring. Don't buy one that's missed services. Don't buy one that's past its belt change. Don't buy one that's, you know, knocking and thudding over bumps, because you can just tell straight away it won't have been looked after to the standard that you need.
There you go. There's your answer. There isn't an answer.
Well, it's sort of an answer. Again, it mainly comes down to budget. But either way, I think you'll love it, because they're a great generation of Discovery. They're incredibly capable and they do an awful lot of stuff. But yeah, go into it with your, as we say, go into it with your eyes wide open. And off the back of this, Adam, our mate Adam Wormlington, has been in touch again about newer vehicles. So it actually ties in with this quite nicely.
I think Adam is probably our number one guy to send in questions.
Correspondence, yeah.
Yeah.
This is feedback more than anything. So he says, I'm two podcasts behind, but I've had a Discovery 5, because we talked a little bit about them the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Amongst other Land Rovers, he's had a Disco 5 and prior to that a Disco 3 and a Disco 4. So he might be the man to answer George's question or add stuff that we've missed potentially. I can certainly give you real world experiences. I came out of a new L663, so a new 110 Defender, into the Disco 5. The Disco 5 was a HSE Luxury 2019 with a digital dash, and it felt so much more luxurious inside compared to the Defender. It was much bigger inside, or at least it felt bigger. The boot was far bigger than the Defender, but still not as good as the Disco 3 and 4. Interesting.
Okay.
Because they kind of taper at the back, don't they, disco fans?
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Just not as capacious. But he says, granted, the rear number plate offset is odd, but once you get used to it, it's fine. I actually quite like it. It's got unique styling, like the floating panels on the Defender. I'd have a Disco 5 again in a heartbeat. It's fraught with trepidation, though, things like leaking windscreens and engine failures. But the infotainment's good, digital dash is great, and they're so comfy to drive and live with. It's yet another Land Rover I wish I'd kept. There we go. Hope this helps on that question. He also goes on to say, Steve needs to uprate his rear suspension to cope with the Penman.
Agreed.
He says they're 660 kilos empty, which is really heavy.
They are 660 empty. My Penman trailer with the camping set up on it, because I didn't weigh all the metal, but I roughly knew because it's X amount of kilos per feet or whatever.
Right.
I'm at about 850 kilos.
Wow.
Is that heavy then?
So it's quite heavy.
Mind you, it's the weight of a smallish caravan.
I suppose, but he also does say, as you well know, that the Penman is designed to be towed slightly nose down for stability.
Which mine is definitely still towed nose down. But yeah. The springs, obviously I've been doing quite a bit of, I've done loads of miles actually in my 90 recently.
Mm.
Like loads. I'm talking like easily over 1,000 miles in the last month, which is a lot. I do 5,000 miles a year, so 1,000 in 1 month is quite a lot.
Sure.
And I've fallen in love with it.
I'm glad to hear it, because you were a bit, like you say, thinking about changing it a bit.
Yeah, I think the weather helps, because it's actually warm inside it.
Yeah.
But we went up to Yorkshire, didn't we?
We did.
Well, I went up to Yorkshire and met you and Neil. We went green laning, so actually did something with it that it's built for.
That was a cracking day, wasn't it?
Which, you'll read about that in the magazine.
You will, yes, in the next couple of months.
Buy LRM and have a read.
You may remember the podcast Neil and I did from the hillside. That was the night before we met up with you.
I haven't listened to it.
Oh, okay.
That's bad, isn't it?
Well,
I'm two podcasts behind.
You're like Adam. You're lagging. You're lagging.
So I've been doing a lot of like fast road work, shall we say. So like 70 miles an hour on the A1 kind of stuff. And it's, oh, mate, it's banging.
They need using, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's been used, and with the anti-roll bars, it helps the handling. It's actually a pleasure to drive it. I look forward to driving it.
That's
but harsh. The only slight niggle I'm going to say is the rear springs. I know they're sitting down a bit at the back.
Just a slightly heavier spring on the back, yeah. And you're sure we sorted.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned already that the anti-roll bars are now on it, which has helped.
Massively.
Help the handling. Video really, coming very soon, really, if it's good. Not already up, which it might be. In fact, it will
be
up.
It will be up by the time you listen to this.
It'll be live on our YouTube.
We're trying to get ahead of the game here, aren't we?
We are, aren't we?
Yeah.
That was... And actually, quite an easy fitment. Not challenging at all, depending on how many bolts you snap. We were lucky, weren't we?
The anti-roll... Yeah, we were. The first one I undid snapped.
Yeah, I like the intro. You're like, oh, well, yeah, you know, I don't know. Let's see how many are going to put up a fight. You start undoing it, and then there's a cut, and he goes, yeah, this one snapped off. Yeah. The first one shitted off.
This doesn't bode well for, like, the video, does it?
Ah, it's fine, though.
You get some comments on your YouTube, don't you? Like, yeah, because there was no struggle, so it can't be real. But it is very real.
It is. We're... Generally, a lot of the time, the anti-roll bar one notwithstanding, we're videoing, but we're also doing photos for the mag at the same time. So everything gets a little bit disjointed, and you know, you need to stop and wait and pose for a photo, and then you get back going again. So it might feel like there isn't a struggle, but believe me,
Struggles are between, and the swearing,
yeah.
Because we don't have any swearing on our YouTube, do we?
But
the swearing is between.
Yeah,
you have all the same situations everybody else would have.
You will see that when I release the video of me retrimming one of my 110's front seats. You will realise that, yeah, we're no different to anyone else. We do struggle. I was certainly struggling. In fact, it took me more than a day to do, because I started one afternoon thinking I'd bash it out, no problem. And yeah, it was not the case.
Even I pre-warned you on how nasty the job is.
You did.
And you didn't believe me. But where I did mine at the time was... It wasn't the best environment.
No.
But they're horrible.
That video's coming soon anyway, and anyone who wants to see me struggle will certainly see me struggle then, because, it put up a fight for various reasons that you'll see in the video. But should we have another one? You ready?
Yeah, fire away.
This is from Gareth Owen. Gareth emails in. He says, "Hi, Martin and Steve. Thanks for a great weekly podcast. I've been a listener since the first episode and I haven't missed one since. See? Take a leaf out of Gareth's book, Steve. Keep with the programme."
Yeah, I should do.
"I'm a long-time Land Rover fan and finally managed to pick up my dream Land Rover, a Discovery 4 HSE.
Yeah,
hey! Just over 18 months ago, and I've been having fun and games with it since. Last week's episode was great with Neil Watson discussing greenlaning. This is something I've been interested in doing for quite some time as a way of breaking away from the hustle and bustle of life. So I had a chat with the guys on the Glass Stand at LRM Live, Glass's Green Lane Association, and I've signed up." Yeah,
that's a really good start.
It is.
A responsible way to start greenlaning.
Definitely. He says, "Just to be on the safe side, I ended up buying a set of General Grabber 83s and had a chat with MM4x4 also at the LRM show about them installing a winch just in case I get in trouble. Again, shouldn't need it, but it's nice to have that peace of mind. For some reason, the other half insists that I have one fitted and she must be obeyed. Doesn't sound like an awful thing to comply to, really, does it?"
Doesn't sound like an awful other half either that wants to actually spend money on your dander. That's brilliant.
He goes on to say, "I went on my first green lane at the weekend over near Malvern, which was a fantastic and beautiful drive, a great way of taking in the countryside from a different point of view. A quick question for you seasoned green laners. What is the best way of removing the unavoidable scratches that the vehicle picks up from green laning? Also, is it best to put a protective film over the top or just accept that the vehicle will get scratched? Fingers crossed I'll bump into you at Billing. Need one of the LRM podcast stickers to proudly display on the D4. Thanks for taking the time to read this. Gareth." Great question, Gareth. In my experience, you're either more selective about the lanes you do and prevent the scratches happening in the first place, or certainly from my experience, you either get busy with the compound and polish when you get home. Wash the car, compound it, polish it.
Yeah.
If it's polished before you go, you generally find you pick up fewer scratches. The bodywork tends to stand up better if you've got like a decent wash, polish, wax over the top. They don't.
Of course, you're scratching the wax, not the paint.
You're still going to get scratches, but they won't be nearly as bad. I've seen in the past people, obviously, depending on, again, it comes down to how much you want to spend. You could have the whole car PPF'd, paint protection film.
Yeah.
Which is actually something Land Rover offered on the Defender when it first came out, the new Defender. You could get a complete matte vinyl wrap.
Okay.
Which meant any damage you picked up when you came to sell the car at the end or whatever, you just peel it off and the paint is still fresh. If money's not an issue, you could get it paint corrected and then wrap it in clear.
Cheaper than a respray.
Yeah, it would be cheaper than a respray. That is true. The other option is I've seen on green laning trip, I can't remember, Belgian possibly. We were in Wales one time years ago and these Belgian guys were over. I think they had a Disco 4 and an L322 and they had basically got a roll of cling film from the supermarket and wrapped their car in it.
God, that's mad.
It looked interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know how effective it would have been, but It was probably better than not doing anything.
I would be more inclined, personally, to avoid the lanes that are scratchy.
Yeah.
Or you can trim them up, can't you?
As you go, putting them back.
If there's like just one or two bits, trim it up. We avoided one, didn't we? Neil and...
Yeah, that was like, yeah.
It got really narrow, didn't it? And we're going up for a scratchy one here. And then you decided to back out.
It was an entrance to the lane that we'd used before, a couple of years before. But since we used it then, it was massively overgrown. And there was another way up. So we thought there's no point in forcing our way through this and, you know, causing a lot of paintwork damage. We might as well back.
Yeah, that was a good call, really.
I think there's enough green lanes out there that you can probably still have great experiences and great fun without completely tearing the sides out of your vehicle.
Especially a D4. It's quite a decent sized car as well.
So. I've got the perfect solution.
Have you?
Keep the D4 for nice, use it as your family vehicle, go camping, buy a series that you don't need to worry about. Series 3s are coming up for reasonable money now. Grab one of them, either paint it or just use it as it is and then top the paint up as you need to.
So an ex-military paint job.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing with mine. The first time I took that out properly was at the Series 123 Club's winter camp out, and Neil planned the route, and it was, it picked some scratches up that day, I'll tell you.
get your 1996 expired paint out, repaint it.
1993, actually, but yes. That I would do that. I would honestly, and being a classic as well, super cheap to insure and obviously tax exempt if you get one over 40 years old.
Bad shout, you know.
Just have a dedicated green laner.
Yeah.
There you go.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
So next up is a question from David Copping. He emails in on editorial at lrm.co.uk. He says, good evening, Martin and Steve. Hope you're both well. I'm thoroughly enjoying your podcast and additionally have enjoyed both Malvern and Newbury this year. Well, thanks for coming along and for listening. He says, I have two TD5 110s. One is a station wagon and the other is a hardtop, and I'm trying to improve my current remarkably average spannering skills, and I have a question I hope you can enlighten me on relating to the subject of my email. In relation to nuts and bolts, I am suitably competent at taking things apart and almost as competent at putting them back together again. I know the feeling.
These doors come round mine.
You actually excel at taking things apart.
Yeah, I'm really good at that.
It's the other way. Ta-da! That's a challenge. He says, however, I never know whether I'm meant to use grease, lubricants, threadlock or any other magical potions when putting things back together. The ideal outcome being not having to take them apart again, but when I inevitably do, it's not a hammer swinging contest again. Any light you can shed on this topic would be greatly appreciated.
That is definitely a question for you.
Do you think?
I tend to put copper slip on most things.
So copper slip.
Unless it specifically says not to.
Copper anti-seize compound, to give it its proper
name. Okay.
Will work 90% of the time on most fixings. Where you want to avoid using it. Is so if you're say you're fitting radius arms or trailing arm bolts, only put it on the shank of the bolt. Don't put it on the threads. Don't put the put copper slip on any threads of any fixing that you need to torque, because it will interfere with you with the figure that you actually torque it to.
In what way will it interfere?
Because you're reducing the friction both behind the fixing and on the thread.
Okay.
As you torque it up. So any bolt that has a shank on it, like a blank bit that passes through a bush or whatever, go nuts. Be careful about putting it on the threads of bolts you need to torque. You can put it on bodywork fixings and screws and, you know, whatever else till the cows come.
Exhaust hangers.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Don't use it on stainless. Use aluminium anti-seize compound. If it's stainless going into stainless, go for aluminium.
What if it's stainless going into steel? Like high tensile stainless?
Again, it depends on application.
Okay.
Generally speaking, if it's got stainless, if stainless is involved, use aluminium flavour. If it's normal bolts, use copper. Things like grease, like your normal lithium grease, if you're just doing like your floor screws where they go into plastic inserts and stuff like that,
yeah,
normal lithium grease is perfect for that. Because it won't damage either material, and it just helps it not, you know, tear the thing out when you're taking the floor plates out again in the future, which you inevitably will have to do because Land Rover. Threadlock bolts, like basically, if you take a bolt out and it's obviously had some sort of locking compound on it before, so like your drive flange bolts, caliper bolts, caliper carrier bolts, things like that. If you can see that it's had a locking compound on it, either buy a new bolt, which will come with what they call patch lock on it, which is a dab of locking compound on it, and you just fit it and that's it. Or clean up the bolt, you've got to put a very small amount of like a general use thread lock.
Do people often put too much on, don't they?
Yes, and they use thread lock that's far too strong for what they're doing.
So it's super glue.
Yeah, like if you use like a stud lock or bearing lock or anything like that, you are not getting that bolt out again, especially if you damage the head.
Oh, well, okay.
Aside,
a bit more to this, isn't there?
There's an awful lot to it. It's probably make a great tech feature, so I might have a word with Ed Evans about doing a whole thing on.
Yeah, I think you should, because I've learned something. I didn't know that. I'm glad you answered, because I legitimately, I couldn't have answered that. I was just thinking to all the high tensile stainless steel things that I may have or may not have put on my Vandover that may or may not have copper slip on.
Get me wrong. It's not the end of the world.
Is it better than nothing?
Yeah, but aluminium is the stuff to use with stainless.
Yeah.
Is what I've always been told, and it hasn't steered me wrong so far. You've got to be, everyone goes on about stainless fixings, and they are great, but you've got to be so careful when you're fitting them, because if they pick up, if the thread gets snagged and you keep winding it in, you're bad news. The fixing and the whatever it's going into will be, you'll be tapping it back out and tidying stuff up.
Mm.
They definitely have their place, but you've got to be a bit sensible about where you use stainless.
Okay.
Hope that helps. And to round off his email, he goes on to say, unrelated, but hopefully with some comedy value. I'm slowly working through Newbury Spares Day's stock of foam A-bars. For the viewers at home, I'm showing Steve a picture of said A-bar.
Well, he's been buying them.
Yes.
Okay.
Interesting. So this is TD5 era Defender, when they couldn't fit actual metal A-bars and ball bars anymore. They went to like a pedestrian-friendly foam. I've had two so far in the last 18 months. The first was dined upon by long-leat monkeys who knew foam had an appropriate nutritional value in the first two pictures, and a second, a victim of an old chap who decided to use the front of my station wagon as a braking system. So I'll be looking for another in October. So if you've got a foam A-bar for a Defender for sale, this is your man. David is on the hunt. He's in the market for a foam A-bar.
And Newbury or Malvern Spares Days will be the place to get one from.
Look at that other picture. Look at the state of that. That's monkeys of eating.
Oh, yeah.
I've taken my old 110 station wagon through a safari park, and let me tell you, those monkeys, they take no prisoners.
When I was a kid, I remember watching them. I mean, this shows how old I was, or how old I am now. As a kid, there was a Ford Capri in front with a vinyl roof.
Wow.
Woburn Safari Park in Bedfordshire.
Yeah.
And I remember they were picking at it, and they're literally ripping chunks of this vinyl roof off an old Ford Capri.
Oh, but the owner was livid.
Yeah, but this was like early 80s. Like, when Capri's like...
Like newish cars. Yeah.
Wow. It'd have been a Mark II Capri, because I don't think Mark III Capris had vinyl roofs. But anyway, yeah, they were picking at it and ripping these shreds, and my dad was like, oh, no, look at that.
The only good thing about that is at least they're not doing it to your car.
Oh, it's funny watching it to another one, but...
I've actually got a great picture of a monkey on my spare wheel of my white 110 looking through the back window at a safari park. It's sat on the back on the spare wheel looking through the back window into the cab.
I bet they like Andrews, because it...
Lots of places to sit.
Yeah, they are a proper thing, aren't they?
And if you've got a foam A-bar, lots of food as well.
I didn't even know there was nutritional value.
Well, I think monkeys find nutritional value in everything, don't they? Right, Stevie, I hope you're geared up for this, because this is a monster of a question.
Okay.
It's a really good question. And I'm sure a lot of listeners will be thinking about this themselves. Are you ready?
I am.
James Bing emails, "Hi Martin and Steve, love the podcast and listen every week. Question for you guys. I know you say 3 Land Rovers are the perfect amount or the perfect number, but if you have a barn to fill with a collection of 5 Land Rovers, what would they be?"
Oh, what a question.
Yeah. "Let's say they have to be over 20 years old and you've got a budget of £250,000 total." God, I wouldn't mind a budget of £250,000.
So 5 Land Rovers.
£250,000.
For £250,000.
They don't have to be used. This would be a collection. So,
okay.
"Thank you for all your hard work every week on the podcast. Keep it up. LRM is now the heart of the Land Rover community." James, that is lovely of you to say. We do really enjoy doing the podcast and the magazine, and we hope that the effort we put in is reflected. Anyway, that's enough self-promotion. £250,000, 5 Land Rovers in a barn. What are you buying?
Number one, NAS 90.
Yeah, okay.
I reckon that's going to be 50.
Yeah, probably a bit more, maybe.
Probably more.
For a nice one. Collection standard.
I would love a Parenti.
Would you?
Not a Parenti. No, not a Parenti. Sorry.
You're off to a flying start.
Not a Parenti. What do you call them? The Pulse Ambulance.
Oh, okay. I don't know how much they are either, to be honest. I've never looked.
Yeah, they're cracking on now, but I would have it as a very subtle overland expedition vehicle.
Okay.
Kitted out in the back. So again, probably another 50 grand.
Yeah, you're looking probably 50, 60, aren't you?
Yeah, for something really good. I would have a really, really lovely stage one V8.
Good shout. That's
again,
three.
Look, that's a station wagon, probably.
A station wagon, okay.
Yeah, not just to go down there. Yeah, something really, really cool. I would have to have a Series 1.
Yeah.
I would have to have a Series 1, but it would be like Alistair's.
Yes.
Like a patinaed one, just to have, just because it's art.
Yeah.
And it probably wouldn't be an 80-inch.
No. So, yeah, the 80-inches are great in theory until you try and use one.
Yeah, no, it would be Alistair's, basically.
Alistair's is lovely.
Just to have.
That's four.
Yeah.
What you can get you wanted a patinaed one, I'd say you're safe at 20K, I reckon. The way the market is now.
You would be.
I think you'd get into one for 20 grand.
20 grand,
if
yeah.
If it wasn't an 80, which you're not after.
No, I'm not. And then...
This is your last choice.
If you own a Land Rover, Range Rover or Jaguar and have had trouble with your diesel particulate filter, the DPF, then listen carefully. Lee Day, a major UK law firm, is leading a group claim against Jaguar Land Rover for allegedly faulty DPF systems in diesel models made between 2015 and 2023. They already represent nearly 20,000 Land Rover, Range Rover and Jaguar drivers in a no-win, no-fee compensation claim. To see if your Land Rover qualifies for the claim, visit leedaylaw.info/JLRDPF today.
Yeah. Do you know what? I would probably have to have... Have I mentioned 101?
No.
No, I'd have to have a 101.
Yeah.
I've just noticed a regular theme here. Most of the stuff's got V8s in it.
Yeah. As the Lord intended.
Yeah, but it'd have to be a soft-top GS1.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Because I've already got the ambulance, haven't I?
Yeah.
For the medical emergency, yeah. That's a really good question. So I haven't even put a Range Rover in mine. You'd probably put a soft dash in yours.
I would. Do you know what? I've thought about this a little bit. I didn't know
that question was coming in. So, yeah.
I think they're fine choices. And to be honest, I'm not deviating far from them. I've just got a bit more variety, I think. So, first off, I would definitely have a NAS 90 without a shadow of doubt. Oh, God.
AA yellow for me.
I would go red or the green. Oh. I didn't know. This is humbling for me to admit. I didn't know white was a factory NAS colour until the other day. I thought they were all green, yellow or red. I didn't know you could get them in white from the factory, but you can.
Yeah, no, I did know that.
I didn't.
Yeah.
So you heard it here first.
The white ones do look cool.
I do like the white, but I would go...
I'd have AA yellow.
I'm going green.
100%.
Green.
Yeah.
NAS 90. Range Rover CSK. Two-door. Manual.
Did they put a 4.2 in there?
No, yes, they did. No, I think they were 3.9. I think they were too early for the 4.2.
Okay.
Regardless, that's exactly what I have.
Really, really lovely.
Chrome bumper. I think they do suit an automatic better, but for rarity, I would go for a manual. Behind that V8, oh, beautiful.
Yeah, wind it up a bit.
I would also have a Series 1, but I would have a long wheelbase pickup. I love Series 1 pickups. I love them. I would have a 107 or a 109, not fussy.
Okay.
I haven't really been keeping track of budget here, but I think you've got
a fair bit to play with here at the moment.
Next, I would have either incredibly low mileage collector quality or fully restored Discovery 2 G4.
Oh, do you know what? I looked for one of those the other day just to have a look.
G4 edition, not an actual event vehicle. I'm not bothered about that.
No, G4 edition. G4, really lovely thing.
In probably Borrego yellow.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a real thing for them.
But that's only probably, what, 15,000?
No, for a collector like quality one, 40 grand.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they?
The quality I would want, the standard I would want.
Well, I couldn't find one then.
Probably, yeah. What would I have as my last choice?
I don't know what you're up to budget-wise.
No, I don't really. I think I'm comfortably under 250.
Easy, yeah.
Got Range Rover, got Disco 2, got 90. got a Series 1. See, I'm half tempted to go 101 as well. No. Do you know what I'd have?
2B forward control.
Tempting. Forest Rover.
Yeah, no, that is... Yeah, that's really, really cool.
They're just for pure... Just stand there and look at it and go, look at that thing.
We've gone for fairly conventional Land Rovers, haven't we?
Yeah, but I think that reflects our tastes and personalities.
Yeah.
That's what...
Very traditional.
Part of me thinks there should be a diesel in there, like a TDI in there somewhere.
Oh, they have a TDI in mine with the Pulse Ambulance, 300 TDI.
Oh, right. You're converting it, are you? Oh, you want a Defender? The Pulse Ambulance is that? Sorry, for some reason I thought they were series based. I do apologise.
No. The Pulse. So I'm talking, 1996-ish era, 300 TDI.
Got you.
Pulse Ambulance. I've every time I see them, and there was quite a few at LRM Live actually, all lined up, and never been converted to like camper spec. Every time I see one, it's the Land Rover that I think I wish I'd bought.
I don't know how much they are now. I don't know.
Yeah,
if they're
cracking on.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, there's your question, James. What an absolutely brilliant question. Listeners.
Just wish I'd got 250,000 to spend on.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Let us know your 5 ideal collector standard Land Rovers for 250k. If you want, send us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk. I would absolutely love to hear what everyone else would have.
I would, actually.
Over 20 years old. So, yeah. The world is still your oyster. There's an awful lot out there. Could you just imagine cruising around on a day like today in a V890 soft top? Ah! Oh, I still think you need to put V8 in yours and get rid of that TDI. Yeah. If you need to sell it...
Yeah. Engineer. Hey, why is that, Martin, can I ask?
Oh, Steve.
Listen, right, can we talk about your MOT?
Yeah, if you want.
So you needed a bit of backup to take your Land Rover for them, your 110 that you just put back together.
Let's set the scene here.
Yeah, in case anyone's not listened to this before.
So I bought this 110 back in January. Can you believe it's been that long?
It was freezing when we looked at that.
It was very cold.
On YouTube.
It is on YouTube.
If anyone wants to check it out.
Buying a project and there's subsequent adventures we've had with it. But it's a 1985 110 hardtop that I bought off our friend Ian Bourne. And it's been off the road over 10 years. Needed quite a bit of work to bring back up to standard. The work is now done, mostly. Well, it is done.
It's done.
And we went and took it for MOT the other day, didn't we?
So I came to yours, followed you.
Because it had been off the road that long, I haven't done a cam belt on it or anything like that. I thought it would be quite good to have someone follow me in case there is a mishap and then I can get someone to tow me home. So Steve came to my house. We did a little bit more filming, didn't we? And then off we went to the MOT.
Quite apprehensive.
I was genuinely nervous.
You were like, yeah, you were nervous.
I don't think that's a unnatural thing to be when you're driving a complete unknown. I mean,
but we also said back in the day when we were younger lads, we wouldn't have cared a dicky bird if it had got fuel in it, no fuel, oil, just we would have just driven it. But now we're like, oh, let's make sure we've got a tow rope. And
it comes with age, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, maturity.
I mean, my first two Land Rovers I had when I was 17, 18 up to 21. I never did a cam belt on them, just got in them and drove them.
Yeah, think now we're like, oh, what if it snaps on the route?
I know. But so essentially,
hopefully it would.
It did make it there.
It did.
I won't, you know, spoil too much because there will be a video out about it and it'll obviously be in the magazine.
I was quite surprised. You were zipping along nicely.
It's definitely got a 1.6 transfer box. It does about 50. You reckon we touched 60 on the way there?
I think.
It's actually really nice to drive. It's really quite quiet. I've resealed all the floors.
Oh, okay.
As far as transmission noise goes, it's far better than I thought it would be.
It needed a good clear out. It certainly, because the MOT was what, a half an hour drive?
Yeah, it was a bit of a, it was about 20 miles, yeah.
Yeah, decent drive. It was a bit smoky at first.
Don't forget, it's still got 10-year-old diesel in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bit.
So we got there. It had its MOT. It passed. I think we can.
It passed.
Anyone can look it up anyway. It passed. There was a couple of advisories. One of the rear wheels I've over-adjusted slightly. The brakes need to be backed off a little bit, which I've done. And there was something else. Can't remember what it was.
There may or may not have been a leak.
Ah, an oil leak, yes, from the sump gasket.
What made me laugh, and you know when it's at that awkward moment you don't want to say anything, so the MOT inspector
Absolute legend.
Legend of a guy.
I take all my cars there because he's just so...
He's slightly balding, isn't he? But yeah. Upon his bald patch was a massive blob of oil, hot oil running down the back of his head. And I, at that point, I didn't want to say, oh, Martin's Land Rover's dripped a lot of oil on you, because then I thought it might highlight the fact it was leaking.
Well, he could see it was leaking oil, but the requirement for a fail on an oil leak is the pool of oil on the floor has to be over 7 centimetres in diameter.
Which I think is significant.
Which is an awful lot of oil to be losing out the bottom of any vehicle that you're presenting for test.
So 6 centimetres, it would pass.
So
that's mad.
I knew it had a leak. I thought it was from the rear main oil seal. Thankfully, with it on a ramp, we were able to see that it isn't. It's just the sump gasket. So it's a tenner for the part. And
yeah, it's just a bit...
However, what we noticed on pulling up back at my house was there was diesel also leaking, which obviously wasn't leaking when it went through an MOT, because it definitely would have failed on a diesel leak. But
it's now done 40 miles, hasn't it, for its first journey.
And it only leaks at certain throttle positions. So when it was idling, it's idling for majority of the test, it wouldn't have been leaking anyway. There would have been nothing to show diesel coming out. But at sort of quarter to half throttle, it leaks from the throttle spindle on the injector pump.
Okay.
Not a problem, I thought. I'll order some new O-rings for that. They'll be old and perished. Changed them. Put it back together. The top of the injection pump, the hole where the throttle spindle passes through, is egg-shaped. It's ovaled out. So even with the new spindle and seals, it still leaks at certain throttle positions. So spoke to a few people. They've said, oh, the top cover isn't available anymore. I had one guy from a diesel injection specialist I won't name have a go at me down the phone because I'd tried to fix it myself.
Why?
Because he was like, you'll never get that back together. You'll never get it back together. You're lucky that didn't run away with itself when you started the engine up. And I said, mate, I'm not a diesel specialist by any means, but I was careful. I took my time. I knew it was going back together in the right position because I measured everything and took pictures.
Yeah.
It went back together. It started, ran and revved absolutely fine. He was really aggressive. And I thought,
oh, by then. Oh, yeah.
He basically said, you have to take the pump off and bring it to us. Otherwise, that's it. Oh, well, no.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That sounds like he particularly...
So it's getting another engine.
Oh, okay. I don't know that.
Yeah, because the amount of faff and messing around and taking the cover off, because you'd put a cam belt on it at the same time, even if you put another used injection pump on it. By the time you've done that, you've still got a 14J Sherpa engine, which you can't even wade with because the front cover is wrong. And I've decided that...
So, TDI?
No.
What?
It's getting a 12J, but... I thought I told you this.
12J?
So, the
proper 12J,
non-turbo. No, I've got a 14J, which is a Sherpa freight rover engine, which was never designed to go... It's the same block.
Not a 19J.
Well, this is where it gets interesting. It's a 12J, but it's a really late 12J. It's like a not early 90s engine, so it's got the feed and return ports for a turbo. So what I'm going to do...
But it isn't a turbo.
Not at the moment.
Right.
I'm going to put turbo injection pump on it, put a turbo on it, which is all coming with the engine, and turbo pistons, and convert it. Because it's low mileage, ex-military engine at the moment, so it hasn't done a lot. It runs great, doesn't leak. So I'm basically going to turbocharge it and then put that in.
Okay.
That's
which, as we already know, will make no difference whatsoever to your insurance premium.
No, indeed not. But it'll give, I'm hoping, a useful increase in power, but I won't have to go and buy all the new pipe work. I've already got a 19J radiator in it anyway. It's still kind of period correct because it's a period correct engine, but it will have a turbo on, you know, added. And yeah, that's the plan. I'm going to pick it up tomorrow.
Oh, well, okay. Fair enough.
Which brings us on to, conveniently, something I'll be taking with me to go and pick this engine up. It's an engine crane from Machine Mart. Everyone should have one.
That was an accidental segue into...
That was genuinely something that's happening.
Yeah.
But yes, so this month's product shout-out for Machine Mart is the Clark CFC 100 one-ton folding workshop crane, which I have owned for... probably about 8 or 9 years I've had mine, and it's brilliant. It's...
Well, you brought it around my house.
Yeah, you know I said everyone should have one?
Yeah.
You should probably have one.
No. I'd borrow your horse.
Cheers, mate. So...
I don't want that cluttering up the yard.
This... you've got plenty of us. Stop cluttering it. Yeah. Machinemark.co.uk, you can buy this from. It is as pretty much, not to talk it down, as Commonwealth Garden and Engine Crane for the, you know, budding mechanic, home DIY Land Rover fettler as you can get. Adjustable boom, obviously folds down flat when it's not in use, so you can shove it up against the wall, exactly how it is in my garage at home.
Yeah.
Doesn't take up tons of room. It's on got casters on the back, big wheels on the front, so you can roll it around on smooth surfaces, unlike...
Gravel
driveway. But you work around that. You move the chassis instead of the crane, things like that. I've been really impressed with mine. Apart from the paint fading, where a friend borrowed it and left it outside for months, it's standing up really well. I've got 1 ton capacity, which I've almost certainly exceeded on numerous occasions, but it stands up to it.
Not in a mag, of course, because you wouldn't condone such behaviour.
Exactly. And it's just a great... As I say, if you're doing Land Rover engine conversions day in, day out, you would buy a much bigger, more manoeuvrable...
Because we're talking about the engine, the gearbox, transfer box hanging off that.
It's weight, it's serious weight. You would be buying something a lot more professional.
Yeah, you would.
But for everything I've done, and I've done a lot of engines with it, back to the old Turbo Freelander, engine in and out my old Series 3 station wagon, engine in and out of the V8 when we did the chassis swap.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be pulling the engine out of my 110.
It's done mine.
Possibly even this
Your
weekend.
Mates.
Done yours, yeah. Done my mate's. He borrowed it for his car. It's actually, it's £263.98 at the moment, although Machine Mark do sometimes have specials on, so it's worth keeping an eye on the website. It's a cracking bit of kit for the money. I cannot fault it.
Well, you needed two or three mates to chip in and buy one and share it.
Share it around, yeah. It pay for itself. By the time you've hired one, if you go to a hire shop, and hire a crane for the weekend, it's, you know, you're probably paying half that anyway.
I bet you're in for nearly 100 quid.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm chuffed with it. It's just, Clark CFC 100, it's called. And if you go on Machine Mart's website, the product code is 02011042. So you can look it up and invest in one yourself because you deserve it.
Yeah. And so does your Land Rover.
So does your Land Rover, especially if you're if you've got an injection pump that's slashing diesel out and you can't get any parts for it. So not that I'm lingering on that or anything, but
so we're going to a car meet tonight.
Oh, I was just about to say I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah. So are you dressed for the airport?
Right. I don't own a lot of clothes, Steve. I'm not like you. I'm not fashionista. I own clothes for purpose. And it's a hot day today. It's a hot day, right? So I thought, right, I'm gonna wear a light shirt, I'm gonna wear shorts, and I've got white trainers on.
The whitest of white trainers. I only ever see you wearing boots.
These are holiday trainers.
They are absolutely holiday. They've been worn through the airport and only to the airport.
Not even that. They get worn on holiday, like when I'm there, and then.
That's why you look like you're dressed for holiday.
I am, but I was gonna wear boots, and my wife, who thankfully has much better taste and fashion conscious than I do, said, "Are you wearing those boots with that shirt and those shorts?" And I was like, well, I was going to. She said, no, you can't, that looks silly. So I went and put the shoes on. But I do look like I'm dressed to go out and have dinner at some all-inclusive hotel.
You do. That. You would wear that if you were getting dressed for dinner at an all-inclusive.
Which is generally what I wear it for. Well, it hasn't been recently because I've not gone on holiday because I keep spending money on Land Rovers. But anyway.
So you should.
I was out driving around the other day. I was actually on the way to a friend's house who's helping me with the body on my Boom Racing model Land Rover, which you'll see in the magazine as well. And do you know what I saw for sale at the side of the road? A vehicle I never thought I would see for sale at the side of the road. I bet you can't guess it.
Well, not a Land Rover.
It is a Land Rover. But I bet you can't guess which one it is.
No, I know.
An orange Evoque convertible.
Okay.
Do you know, like do you know the colour I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly the colour.
I think they probably launched it in that colour. It's almost like a...
Yeah, I think it was a launch colour.
Not quite Vesuvius, not quite as vivid as Vesuvius.
It's almost a very burnt orange.
It's a bit of a baked bean colour. Baked bean sauce.
Baked bean sauce.
And I had to double take because, whenever I see an Evoque convertible, I think, crikey, you don't see them very often.
Yeah.
But I've never seen one. I don't think I've ever seen an Evoque for sale at the side of the road, let alone an Evoque convertible.
What, a private sale?
Yeah. How with a bit of paper in the windscreen. I didn't see. I was driving. I couldn't stop and have a look. But I just couldn't believe my eyes.
You don't see many cars for sale at the side of the road.
Not nearly as many. No, you don't. It's strange, really, isn't it? But I certainly didn't expect to see that. You'd expect to see that on like Auto Trader or LRM Marketplace.
Mm.
Nice Freelander 2 on there at the moment, actually, in unrelated news.
Oh, I saw a lovely one the other day, Freelander 2.
Did you?
In that, is it, what's the, that deep red colour? Montecino? Is it Montecino?
No, Montecino's on the Defender and Discovery 4. It probably would have been Ferenz on the Freelander 2.
Ferenz.
Quite a vivid red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really lovely. With the front runner roof rack.
Ah, oh, nice.
It was the, well, one of the run-out models, I think.
Yeah, one of the very last.
It's just beautifully clear. It's only up the road from here.
I'm getting pretty serious about updating mine now, especially after...
So is your turbo.
The turbo's okay. It's hanging in there. It's the infotainment system that, since it's been warm, has started playing up. I put a Bluetooth module on it a couple of years ago, a used one, because I don't even know if you can buy new ones anymore. And if you can, they're probably £300. But there's a little unit in the back which controls all the phone system.
Okay.
When you pair your phone to the car, and they just expire all the time, and it's done it again. And
but it gets quite hot behind there, behind the dash.
Well, probably, yeah. Well, it's behind the boot trim in the back, but the causes.
Is that right? Okay, that's right.
All your sat nav screen and your radio to keep cycling, and every time it comes back on, the speakers do a really loud pop. And I was ready to take a hammer to the dashboard.
Is that like an amplifier noise? Goes doof.
Yes, exactly like
that. Oh, that's annoying.
So, and everything's connected. That era of car used a lot of fibre optic. They call it MOST connections. It's how everything talks to each other. So if one module on that system is out, it just throws everything else into panic mode, basically. And so I've got another Bluetooth module on the way for it, another used one. So we'll see how long that lasts. But I'm at the point now where I'm thinking... I'd really, really like a newer one.
Yeah. It's not so much a want, it's probably a need, isn't it? Because it's a working car, it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although you went green laning in it the other day.
Yeah, it performed out.
And I tell you what, I must say, like where I was in my 90, there was bits where it was quite rocky and you had to pick your route and you stuck a wheel or two in the air and you got a little bit stuck, chose a different line. I got stuck in the same point. You know, they weren't, one didn't outperform the other.
Yeah.
Fantastic thing off road to watch, because I was obviously from behind watching your car go over. And I think, wow, that is a thing and a half.
It impressed me that day. It impresses me a lot most of the time. But that day when, like you say, from cruising all the way up to North Yorkshire, doing, you know, enough space for two people's camping gear, doing some quite challenging green lanes and then all the way back down, I was thinking, this is a great all-round car. And although it did highlight to me how far traction control, things like that, the driver aids have come in rough terrain, because with that era and earlier, when traction control kicks in, you have to keep your foot on the accelerator because you need the power going to the wheels.
Yeah, that gets, like, there's an uncomfortable moment, isn't there, where it starts clanking. And
then you feel you hear the ABS modulator buzzing as it breaks one wheel and then you get grip. It works, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it works.
It's very, very counterintuitive.
Yeah, you think, back off, because it's making a horrible noise.
And actually, when you drive something like a new Defender or any of the current range in the same situation, you don't even feel it lose traction.
That wouldn't even... like got stuck there, would it?
No, it
like
would have walked up. It would have walked up. It's effective, but the way that it's been refined over the years is just like, you've got to give it to Land Rover for that. Absolutely amazing. Really, really impressive. But it was a great day, wasn't it? We didn't need to get out and do more laning. That's what we need
100%. It made me remember why I like Land Rovers in the first place.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you just don't get to do the fun things
you've just got to either spur of the moment go and do stuff or plan ahead, which is something that's difficult to do when you've got such busy life as ours, Steve.
We did say at the beginning of this year on this podcast, probably our New Year's Day special, was to make sure that you diarise things in advance.
Yeah.
So the year doesn't run away with itself.
We're nearly halfway through. We haven't really...
We should practice what we preach, really.
We should, yeah, that's true.
Because the year just gets away from you, yourself, doesn't it?
Oh, I've been speaking to Roy from 4x4 Obsession and, you know, he's a photographer as well. He's keen to tee us up to do Strata Florida, if you want to come and do that as well.
I've never done that.
Yes, you must do it. I want to do it in the Series 3 because I did it before it got rebuilt and I want to do it again now it's been rebuilt.
I'll just do it in the 90 because that's my only option.
Yeah, but you'll love it. We'll go up and do that again.
Yeah, when are we going?
We'll get it in the diary. Roy said fire some dates over, so we'll...
we should do that.
Yeah, so that's one adventure we'll have planned. We just need to sort the rest of the year out.
Before it's too late.
Indeed. Well, we've got a busy couple of weekends coming up, haven't we? We're recording this a bit in advance of when it'll be released, but it's going to be exciting.
Mm. Well, I was trying to get ahead because we have been recording these pretty much the night before it's gone out.
We've been keeping it current. That's how I like to...
Lastminute.com.
It's not last minute. It's we're staying on the, you know, on the cutting edge of what's happening in our lives by going, oh my word, we need to get a podcast done. But we haven't been late yet, have we?
Nope.
And long may that continue.
Yeah, definitely.
It's great fun. I love doing these. And the feedback's just fantastic. Again, if you've got questions, much like the ones we went through in the first half of this podcast, we love to hear them. They give us food for thought, don't they, really?
One of the questions has made me think, how do I get myself my hands on £250,000?
And a big shed to put all your collection in.
Oh, so shed would cost you nearly half that.
And the rest, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good fun. It's good fun. We love it.
There might be people listening now who have that 5-car collection already.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good point.
So not an actual dream of what they might actually have that collection.
They might well do.
I want to know who's got the most Land Rovers in their collection.
There's a lot to go at, isn't there? Yeah. I'm just, where are we going? Sorry, I'm scrolling back. Ah, here's a message I actually got from Dan Dew from Demand Engineering, who obviously... A great feature on making an exhaust, actually, in the current issue. So make sure you buy the current issue, which is the August issue of Land Rover Monthly, for many, many reasons. But one of those reasons is we go and visit Dan and we have a good old look at what he does and the methods he uses for putting his fantastic stainless steel exhaust together.
Mm.
He says, "Dear Martin and Steve," in brackets, "and Neil," because presumably he listened to the Green Laning one last.
Unlike me.
"Stop making me spend money. Last week's podcast in mind, as I spent a great weekend in Stratford-upon-Avon, amongst other amazing things, attended the 4x4 and Camper Show. And the first thing I did was head over to Glass to sign up to the Green Lane Association, ready for some adventures with the fantastic Land Rover community within which I work." "Great work, guys, but please stop influencing my wallet's downfall. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Yours, Exhausted in Suffolk." Thanks, Dan. It's the least we can do.
Absolutely. I think spending money on Land Rover parts or experiences is fun.
It is, yeah, exactly. What else would you spend it on? Can't take it with you.
No.
That's what I keep telling myself. You'd spend it on holidays.
You'd spend it on that.
White shoes.
White shoes, for the looks of it.
Do you know what? I got in the Series 3 this morning and I thought to myself, I wonder how many dirty smudges this shirt's going to have on it before I get to the office.
You can't go near an old Land Rover without getting covered in dirt.
No. No, it's a challenge. I think I've succeeded so far, but we'll see if that lasts the rest of the day. But I think we'll round it off there, shall we?
Yeah.
Unless you've got anything else to chip in with. Have you got any other project updates before we go? Apart from picking up your wiring loom?
Yes, I have actually.
Go on.
So we are between parts of the rear tub rebuild.
Yes. The picture you sent me.
So, for context, the rear tub, as it was, I changed the floor and the underfloor supports.
Mm-hmm.
What, 4 years ago? 3 years ago?
Yeah.
And the rear tub sat there. Now, what's left of the rear tub that's usable going forward is the new floor and the underfloor supports.
I thought you were joking when you sent me the picture Phoenix Automotive where it's being where they're putting it together. this is the usable stuff that's left of the tub. I genuinely thought you were having me on.
No. The rest has gone to scrap.
It's absolutely fantastic.
It is old, and, well, is it 40?
Yeah, it is really old.
In fact, that Land Rover is 40 years old next month.
Oh, okay.
That's when it was registered.
Mm.
So it is 40 years old.
Yeah.
And, it's had a hard old life, and it's time to be refreshed.
Well, that's exactly what it's getting, isn't it?
So essentially, we've been there, we've photographed it, it's going to go in the mag, in the tech section, how it's done.
It'll be really insightful. I don't think it's been done before, actually.
No, not to this degree, it hasn't, no.
No.
Certain repair sections, but if you want to go all out and, you know, how to bond on a new outer wing or how to change the wheel arch boxes.
And this is holes. Stuff that people will be doing.
Yeah, it is. It's a unique way of unpicking, basically, something that is spot welded.
Hmm.
And then, because of the processes, we're doing it in two sittings, but actually there are four separate steps. We'll do it in two
yeah,
parts.
Yeah. Sure.
Otherwise, people get bored. But there are four significant steps because you have to bond things and you have to wait for it to dry.
Yeah, it's not a five-minute job, is it?
But when you get to the end, it's how it's all constructed and how to make it look like it's never been picked apart.
They're a complex beast.
They are, a lot more complex. And what it highlighted to me was, when you're looking at a Land Rover, and we say the same, don't we? You know, what should I look for? Well, you tell people to look at the chassis and the bulkhead. The dearest item of those three things.
Mm.
Out of the chassis and the bulkhead, you look at those. The rear body is actually dearer than those two things.
Yeah.
Or ultimately, as expensive, you have to buy a brand new rear tub.
It's
almost as expensive as a chassis and bulkhead combined.
I think because they're primarily alloy, people go, it's not so much of a big issue, but it is now.
It is actually a mega issue. And yeah, so if I was looking at a Land Rover now, I'd be poking around at the body as much as I did the chassis.
Yeah, that's wise. I actually saw someone on Facebook put a photo up in one of the groups and said, I might need to get a new chassis. They were obviously either new to Land Rovers or not, you know, hugely technical, which is fine. You know, not everyone's got dirt under their fingernails. You know, people are into it different reasons. But they'd actually put up a picture of the outrigger on, I think it was a 90. And the outrigger was fine. The tabs that bolt to the tub were fine. Everywhere around where the uprights from the outrigger were, completely gone. Okay. No alloy there at all. The tub was literally not attached at the front.
So arguably, the chassis, if it had gone, that's an easier repair. An outrigger is a relatively easy repair.
Yeah.
But the rear tub...
There's a few different ways of going about it. You could obviously do what I did on my Series 3's current tub and replace the whole rail. Or you can get repair kits where you sort of tidy up the area and then you panel bond on a new piece of alloy and then you drill through it.
Yeah, you can.
That's
do that.
A perfectly valid
okay.
repair.
It depends what look you're after and how good you want it to,
obviously,
to look.
Yours, new chassis, new bulkhead, nice paint.
New wiring loom, all of a sudden it's becoming like...
You're elevating it.
It's out of hand. That's what it is. And in order to restore things, it's that you look at it and think, well, it's like floor panels, right? Do you straighten a floor panel and try and get rid of all the gouges and things, or and then the paint shop's going to have to maintain it, or do you just go buy new ones?
For the price of floor panels, I'd buy new ones.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So that all of a sudden, but then that's how the project is, because nothing that's secondhand is good enough to go back on it.
I know. People said in the latest video I put up on the 110, why didn't you paint the heater box?
I did ask you that question at the time, but then actually...
Because if you painted the heater box, it would stand out like a sore thumb under the bonnet because everything else is a bit scruffy.
Yeah, I get why you didn't.
Whereas you're at the other end now because everything else is nice and shiny and mint, or it will be once it's come back.
I can't put a rusty anything on back on now.
No.
And it's like, it's made it harder work and more expensive.
But it'll be lovely when it's done.
Yeah.
Anyway, hashtag pray for Steve's bank account. We're going to call it there. Thanks again for listening. I'm Land Rover Martin on Instagram.
And I'm Steve Miller Automotive.
And obviously follow Land Rover Monthly, Facebook, Instagram, subscribe on the YouTube channel, of course, and sign up to the newsletters, why not? Fresh newsletters, all the latest Land Rover news straight into your email inbox every single month. Head to the website, do a little click on the box, simple as pie, and obviously, buy the August issue of Land Rover Monthly magazine, because it is packed from cover to cover in the best Land Rover content you will find anywhere.
In the world.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And if you think any different, I will do my best to convince you otherwise. Anyway.
It's working sales.
Do you think?
No.
No, the sales bit's over now. Anyway. Yeah, as always, thanks ever so much for listening. Feedback, leave a rating, leave a review. Editorial at lrm.co.uk. My voice is getting sore. See you next week.
Bye for now.